And a very good morning and welcome to the studio. Craig Hunter from Rehoboth Christian College. Good morning, Craig.
Mike Crichton, good to see you.
What's going on? Why are you wearing... Are you the deputy principal?
This is Freo's time in the sun, so that kind of trumps it at the moment.
Is that permitted at your school? are you allowed to wear that Dockers top in school, or is that banned? I mean, seriously, what is going on?
There's been a lot of West Coast paraphernalia going on, but I think this is Freo's time in the sun. Let's be honest, being a West Coast supporter right now is a bit problematic. You can't go much lower than...
No, well, they're probably going to go worse tomorrow because my team is playing the West Coast Eagles. So the Adelaide Crows tomorrow are going to absolutely thump them tomorrow, I reckon.
Wow.
That's a big call. I reckon probably 10 goals tomorrow.
Wow, big call.
Actually, maybe even more.
Gosh.
Could be a dozen goals tomorrow, I reckon. see what happens next time we catch up.
New curriculum.
How often does this change?
So it's only come in the late, about 2007, Julia Gillard, Kevin Rudd decided that we need a national curriculum.
Kevin 07.
Mm-hmm. And they thought, you know what? Let's say I'm from Adelaide and I moved to Perth.
Yep.
Where's the consistency? You know what I mean? I want to be teaching the same, learning the same maths, English. And so it's a really good strategy. National curriculum was started to get developed and that plan to try and bring some consistency across the whole country. So good idea.
Has it worked?
I think in parts it has.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll chat about some of the next iteration coming up.
Back after this. The school curriculum. Look, there must be a whole bunch of demands, I guess, to try and push into the curriculum as things change over years, right, Craig?
There is. And as you know, some of the new things about consent and about gender and cybersecurity, all those things are changing. But traditionally, there's 8 learning areas. And it's good for people to know that we often think about reading and maths, you know, literacy and maths. But other areas that are mandated are things like languages, humanities, science, sport, health, technology, and music. And so those things are all seen as equally important subjects, probably less time allocated.
Mm.
But there is a cluttered thing. And with more and more demands at schools, it is tough to try and cover all those things. And so that's what's traditionally happened is that each state has had their own curriculum.
Right.
But what's happening more and more is that there's a national curriculum, and then the states will either take it on 100%, they will amalgamate it into their own curriculum, or they'll go their own way, which is probably a little bit what New South Wales and Victoria have done to some extent as well.
So you hang on. So you've got both a federal input,
yes,
as well as state education input.
And there is a to and fro. Yeah, there's a to and fro there. And each state decides how much of the national curriculum we want to imbibe and we want to follow. But I think if we see the curriculum as a map, it's not really a mandated, like a step-by-step, you will teach this every lesson. It's more like these are the indicators, these are the outcomes, these are the topics. And so curriculum is more of a map to help teachers get there and to make sure there's continuity, rather than in some countries, it's almost like a prescriptive list of what's taught. It does have influence, and textbooks are often produced and materials produced around those curriculum maps. But that's kind of how it works.
So just on that, just so I'm, it's been a little while since I've been in the school system, as you would know, Craig.
I understand.
So can each school then decide what their curriculum looks like from school to school? Or do you have to meet, does schools have to meet certain criteria?
They do.
Like in WA, is it?
And schools get audited. Obviously, in the government system,
yeah,
there's a state body that will ensure that happens. And then certainly for us in non-government schools, we get audited every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
And those audits will go with a fine-tooth comb through all of our things. And we've got to show that we are teaching it, you know, appropriately and getting the right results and getting the right, helping kids with special needs and showing good compliance and following the protocols and all those things. So there is an accountability, and that's sort of how it works.
All right, look, Craig, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Keen to know what are some of the good things in the new curriculum. We'll take a break. But love to hear from you this morning. Give us a call, 9313-0985. Love to know, what would you add in that's not in? Something really random, like, I reckon we should teach kids how to vote and what the voting paper looks like. I know it's a bit random, but give us a call. What would you add into the curriculum? 9313-0985. You are on at 98.5 weekdays with Mike. Craig Hunter from Rehoboth Christian College is with me. We're talking about the changes to the curriculum. Craig, we did a poll on our Insta page last night, and we asked the question regarding the new national school curriculum. Do we really need it? Was the question, yes or no? 55% said no, 45% said yes. So bit of a 50-50 there, which is quite, did that surprise you? Those stats?
I think we're all a bit wary. I think there's a lot of stuff in the media about some of the changes, good and bad, which we'll chat about. And I think sometimes with change, we're always thinking, is this going to help us or is this going to make it more complicated? Is this going to become something that's going to affect my kids in a positive way or not? And I think there's, the jury's still out on that, what that looks like.
Good morning, Helen from Warnbro. Helen's chimed in this morning. Thanks, Helen. Helen says, I am an ex-defence family. We mandated and won the charge in 2007 to alter the curriculum so that our kids were not disadvantaged due to our moves every 2 years, the same as writing, now nationalised so that all writing is standardised. Big win for defence families. You forget about the amount of people in defence that are moving, let alone people that are just moving for jobs, right?
That's right, and I think it's a good move. And I think we understand that learning is a continuum, and the fact that, you know, if you're learning decimals to two places, your next thing is three places, and we're always in a spiral. And if it gets hodgepodge, if it gets all messed up, it's tough for kids. You know, they've got to somehow jump in, make new friends, learn routines, and then learn all this stuff they've either learnt before or they don't understand. And so really good comment. I think it's just been a really good thing overall for our education system.
So, Craig, talking about the curriculum now, like, tell us some of the good things that are in the new curriculum.
Yeah, I think the first thing is an emphasis on ancient history that includes not just ancient Egypt and Rome, but also Aboriginal people.
Yeah, that's a good
move. Teaching it as an understanding of their history and their culture, not just boomerangs and dot paintings, as some of the critics have said. So let's not just, you know, like a tokenistic way. Let's just teach it and understand and look at some of the history and show respect to their culture and their language and their influence. And let's just really understand. That's a good thing. Interesting, at year 10, 15 significant Aboriginal campaigners are mentioned, and almost half of them had a faith that helped them shape their motives. And I think that's really good, the fact that we're looking at Aboriginal Christians who've made a difference, because often we think that Aboriginal culture and Christianity are mutually exclusive. And one of the famous ones is William Cooper, who rallied Christians as a pastor and said, we need to recognize Aboriginal people, show respect, pray for our country. And he organized these rallies. And that was the embryo of NIDOC Week. He was basically the father of NIDOC.
Amazing. Yeah.
And so there's these kind of things. I think the third thing is just a back to basics approach.
I'm liking this already.
Oh,
let's keep
basics.
It simple. Back to basics.
So things like, so there's been a debate around phonics versus whole language that's been raging for a number of years. And so I think the government's going to look, let's stick with phonics, which is more the rigor of learning language, how it works. And I think that's a good move. Same with maths. We talked about times tables last week. The fact that we want to push it back. Let's make sure that kids learn times tables, learn their number, learn their numeracy.
What do you mean push it back?
So push back, and so instead of going, oh, look, times tables, you know, you can start at year two or three. Let's learn it earlier. Let's make sure that our kids, by the time they're nine, know their times tables.
Well, we just sing it, so we all know it, right?
Well, that's it. Why learn it when you can sing it? Yeah. Or back of the toilet door, apparently.
Exactly. Of course, back of the toilet door.
That's it. So some good things there. And I think that certainly there's some really good rigor that's been restored. Because remember, our stats are going down. As a country, our stats, especially in maths, we're falling behind 3 years at year 10 to Singapore. That's terrible.
Wow.
So we really have to increase some of that rigor around learning literacy and maths especially. And these other things are important as well.
What's 8 times 8?
64.
Six times 5?
I'm going to give you one. 13 times 13.
We've got to go to a break back after this. 98.5 weekdays with Mike. Craig Hunter's with me from Rehoboth Christian College. We're talking about the curriculum. Finally, common sense has prevailed this morning, Craig. We've got some common sense listeners coming, got some great ideas coming through. I'm loving this. We haven't got your name, unfortunately, but the suggestion to add into the curriculum, map reading and offline confidence. So in other words, do what we used to do. Do you remember using the old street directory?
Yep. I remember doing a taxi test, and you had to work out the quickest way to get there without going through traffic lights as well.
Brilliant. Yep. You didn't have a device.
Nope.
There was no such thing as Google Maps back in the
day. And you couldn't, they're talking to you and telling you what to do, and then you end up driving and you go up a cliff because Google tells you to do that?
Exactly. See, I love this because when we used to use a street directory, you'd look at your destination in the street directory, you'd flip over the pages, map, that joined the next page
That's
on
right.
page 242, right? And then you'd go back to 238. I don't know why they'd ever match up, but anyway, that's a whole other story, right?
Yes.
And then you go, okay, I need to go left, I need to go there. You'd work it all out in your head,
yes.
right?
And sometimes then, I draw in my street directory.
You'd highlight it, and then you'd close the street directory, and then you'd just drive there.
Yes. You'd pre-memorize it.
Right?
That's right.
So I like it. It's a great idea.
But you know what's amazing is seeing these young kids use computers and technology. It is incredible. So I'll teach a subject about coding or I'll do some things. All of a sudden, this kid's going, oh, I've just done this, Mr. Hunter. Look at this. And they've created this whole thing with their finger and changed the whole settings and created this whole new thing that I didn't even know existed on the computers.
Wow.
And so the reality is our world is going towards computers. So that's where curriculum needs to change. To adapt, but I do hear what this person has contributed, that actually there's still got to be common sense about learning how to use things offline.
Use our brain.
You can do both, actually, Mike.
Really?
You can use a brain and use computers at the same time as a tool.
Interesting.
Now,
okay.
Where
are we?
Some of the challenges of the new curriculum are this, and it's still being debated, and you might remember Alan Tudge, the former education minister, was pushing back a lot. You know, let's teach patriotism. Let's make sure we're proud of our history of Australia. And I guess that's around this debate of critical thinking versus critical theory. Mm. And what that means is that it is important to look at our world and history critically. We don't just take it all in. We've got to go, hey, look, we've done some bad stuff in history. You know, we've got the stolen generations. We've got some things that we've done that we need to own and face. Mixed with critical theory often can make us the oppressors, you know what I mean? So those evil colonializers that came in and ruined Australia. There's some good things that came with colonization. Mm. And the gospel came with that. And a lot of Aboriginal people and people that came, actually, a lot of the convicts as well, met Jesus and had a relationship with him. So there's some good things in our history as well as bad. And I think sometimes this culture war debate plays out in curriculum. And that's probably something I see. Climate change is another area. So there's a big push to teach climate change and climate activism from a young age, as well as gender and some other controversial areas that has a lot of consultation, but it is a challenge. And I think that...
How do you fit it all in?
That's it. I think that the issue is more about, as a teacher, what posture do I take as a teacher, as well as how I fit it in, and what's an appropriate tone I want to set in the class and helping kids. Because one of the challenges, you know, a four-year-old kid doesn't think about climate activism and climate change at the same level, that they need to really learn their basics well, and then they can apply those skills to the world. I think one of the dangers is teaching too much abstract ideas at a young age is they don't get their basics down well. So that's one of the challenges we've got as well.
What about geography? Do they still teach that?
Is that
still a subject?
It's funny, I was doing some research last night, and the geography area are quite upset about the fact that a lot of geography, things like mapping.
Yeah, which we've just talking about, right? Yeah.
Things like teaching about different climate cultures and weather patterns and understanding all that has been taken out of the new curriculum.
Really?
Yes. So they're quite annoyed about the idea. Even things like, at the moment in grade four, I teach about South America and Asia and our place and how that all relates, and we do a bit of stuff on Africa.
Yeah.
That's been taken out of the new curriculum. So one of the challenges that you've mentioned about clutter is it actually puts pressure on what we do and don't teach. And as much as we can go, so technically I can't go, well, I'm going to teach it anyway. I'm still obliged to teach those topics that the curriculum mandates.
What, biology? Do I still teach that?
That's more of a high school thing. But things like I teach the life cycle, like a frog.
And physics? Yeah. What about physics?
Now, did you ever cut up a frog when you were at high school, Mike?
No, I wish I did though. That would have been a bit of fun. Disappointed. I don't know why we didn't do that. I mean, I think it was just different back in the school that I went to. But interesting.
I think one of the keys is, remember, as a parent, be engaged, be involved, know what your kids are learning.
Yeah.
And when it's appropriate, I'll push back. You know, say, hey, I don't want my kid to be learning this. Or don't forget also to encourage your teachers, form a partnership with your teachers, know what they're learning. And if you need to push back, do that. Mm. If you need to say, well done, I'm really grateful. Teachers will always be grateful for any encouragement as well.
We're still getting some suggestions coming through. Helen's chimed in again.
Yes.
We learnt compound interest lay-bys and credit cards.
Do people still do lay-bys?
I don't know. Please call me if you still there's still lay-by departments, right, in your local stores.
Well, remember we used to get the store card, like the Harris Scarf card and that.
The Harris Scarf card, yes.
But you're right, and I think that's the area of finance. I mean, I do a week or two, but really, as we know, a bit like voting, how do kids know how to use money and how to manage money and how money works?
That's what I'm saying, Craig. Things should be in there.
Things like cryptocurrency. How does it work? Is it something we should do?
Craig, who do we talk to? What's the highest level we can go to get our ideas across?
Well, you've got connections, Mike, in the political realm, okay. But certainly you can write to your local MP and the Education Minister.
Education Minister of State?
State.
All right.
And they will influence it. This is still ongoing. It hasn't been finalised yet. It'll start being enacted next year. But this is probably I think most of the consultation has been done.
Okay.
But you can push back and can suggest, a bit like our lady Helen before, who talked about that campaign to bring in a national curriculum so that we do have a voice and we can bring change. Don't forget that.
We could make a list. I've already started it. Yep. Map reading, we've got learning compound interest, how to vote, finances.
Helen just said she still does lay-by. No immediate gratification. I like that. Fantastic.
Okay. Well, I'd love to talk to you today. If you if you've lay-by'd something recently, give us a call. 93130985. Craig, we are out of time. We could keep talking. We'll catch up in a couple of weeks.
Let's see how the footy goes in the weekend.
Go the Dockers and go the Adelaide Crows.